All right, welcome back to another episode of Tomahawk Nation's Hoop Dedicated Podcast. I am Matt Minnick, all as always joined here by Michael Rogner. And Michael, today is October 25th of 2020. And aside from that, meaning that we are still somehow in hurricane season here in North Florida, with another storm possibly bringing us rain next week, does October 25th mean anything to you?
Well, it's a week after my birthday. We picked up that big win on my birthday against North Carolina, and I guess it's one day after having all the air come out of the football yesterday, where we just got embarrassed by Louisville. So happy to be talking some hoops.
Yeah, and happy belated birthday to you, sir. And yeah, I guess Louisville took out some of their hoops frustration on us on the gridiron, but. But really, so what October 25th means is that we are exactly 1 month from the start of the college hoop season. After what feels like probably the longest off season in memory, we're 1 month away. How about that?
Well, that I'm gonna have to go to sleep early, like on, you know, Christmas Eve night, to make that month pass a little quicker, because I am ready for a sport that we're good at.
Yeah, no, Christmas come early for sure. Gonna start racking up some wins again and have a home court that hopefully we can defend as we have the last couple of years. So, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of, over the next month, we'll have a lot of season preview type of materials up on Tomahawk Nation. We have a good episode today for folks joining in here. It's the 1 month out episode. So we're going to be talking FSU's sort of like starting and or finishing lineup, because oftentimes it's not exactly who starts, but who finishes for Coach Hamilton. We got some recruiting talk coming up and as well as some NBA draft conversation, as that actually happens before the season starts. So it's going to be coming up on November 18th. But first, we are going to have we're going to get everybody, just set the table here, set the Thanksgiving table with a little bit of just a general ACC conversation. And for that, we are joined by our good friend, Aria Masoudi. Aria is a play-by-play sideline talent, kind of do-it-all guy. You probably have seen his face in Doak Campbell a few times, and maybe you've heard his voice doing play-by-play for the women's basketball team there for Florida State. So, Aria, welcome to the pod.
Good to have you. I mean, it's good to be here, and thanks for having me, and good to have this time with you two. And I feel like it's almost like a dream pilot episode. I think we've all three of us wanted to be on a podcast together, so here we are.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just gotta make it happen. For folks who don't know, Aria started when he was back at Florida State University as a student. He kind of started off his career helping out Tomahawk Nation in some things. And so it's great to have him come on this and join our fun discussion. And so I'm just going to, you know, Aria, you are in a position where you see, you know, you cover a lot of the ACC teams here. So I'll just hit you off with a good one off the top. Last year, Florida State was at the top of the ACC. I mean, 16-4, most ACC wins ever in school history, probably poised to do big things and finished as the ACC champs, both the regular season and the tournament that didn't happen. So who's at the top this year? Is that Florida State? Is it someone else? Like, who's that tier one look like?
I think Florida State's definitely in that tier one. And Matt, I think a lot of people are high on Virginia, and I think for good reason. When you defend the way that they do, you have to think their offense will be a little bit more efficient, you know, now with Kahe Clark being a little bit older. They've got, you know, shooters, Walden Tensei, who really came on at the end of last year in ACC play. And then you add Hauser and you add some different pieces. That's a team that I really like. Maybe they won't be flashy, but as always, Virginia finds ways to win games. And I actually thought, Matt, that a lot of people were sleeping on Virginia by the end of the year, if you could do that. There seemed to be, you know, especially the Florida State fan base, we were also enamored with what Florida State was doing. We forgot that Virginia really kind of went on the longest win streak to end the season. And that team was scary and could have made a pretty deep run in the NCAA tournament. So if that carries over for them, which I think it does, I think Virginia is probably the team to beat in the ACC this year. And as I mentioned, they added Hauser from Marquette, who is awesome and could challenge for ACC Player of the Year honors. I think Duke, that they tend to reload, and until K has a season in which they are not tier one, they will always be in tier one. I know they added like three more top 15, top 20 prospects in this last class. And I think Florida State's right there at that third, and then maybe Louisville, maybe North Carolina, four and five. But again, I'm not sure what Louisville will do. They lost some key pieces, and people are higher on Louisville than I think I am. I do think David Johnson is a stud, but what about around David Johnson? Like, what are they going to do around David Johnson? So that's a question mark. And North Carolina, I think, used to have that Coach K, Duke, automatic tier one. You would just peg them because you thought they'd always reload, and they have reloaded, right? You know, you got Bako back, and you got some bigs in that center, that the talent, I believe, Walker, maybe Kessler, if that name is correct. He's in there now, but last year they had a lot of talent too. And I think we saw for the first time a coach, Roy Williams team, that did not have that chemistry that you usually see. I tend to think North Carolina will be fine this year. They will be back in tier one, but I'm not 100% sold on it. So that group of four to five to me is battling for tier one.
That's a great, great overview. And I think there's a lot right there that we can dig into a little deeper. So let's set Louisville and UNC aside for just a second and focus. So, and we'll, maybe we'll set Florida State aside too, because this entire podcast is dedicated to Florida State. So let's look at Virginia and Duke. You've got Virginia, which is really, you know, the sort of get old, stay old motto. And they are bringing back a lot of talent. They're adding talent, and the talent that they're adding was actually on campus practicing with the team all last year in Hauser, who you mentioned, the dynamic transfer from Marquette. And then you've got Duke, which is losing Vernon Carey, you know, losing Trey Jones, losing some other talented freshmen, but reloading with guys like Jalen Johnson, who maybe is the best freshman coming into the conference. I don't know, maybe Scotty Barnes has something to say about that, but Jalen Johnson certainly a stud, plus several others. And so Aria, and then maybe Michael, get your thoughts too. Would you rather be coaching the team that is the get old, stay old, or just loaded with elite NBA lottery talent, but maybe didn't have as much time in this COVID offseason to gel?
I think, you know, for me, and then I'll toss it to Michael, I think I like the get old, stay old. I think we've seen in college basketball specifically, you're not guaranteed to make a Final Four or win a national title on pure talent alone. I mean, you could point to all those Kentucky teams, the Duke team with, you know, lotto pick after lotto pick with RJ and Zion. And I mean, they just didn't make, you know, they didn't make a championship game. Like, it's just like not guaranteed, but I think it's guaranteed in college basketball. If you have an experienced backcourt and you've got seniors, you've got a chance. I mean, let's point to Florida State a few years back when they made the Elite Eight. Like, that was an older team that just figured it out, because at the end of the day, if you compartmentalize the NCAA tournament, it is just a tournament. You're pretty much playing a different season. And so older kids typically tend to handle that stage better. So for me, Michael, I think I would rather be in Virginia's shoes right now with Tony Bennett than in Duke's.
Yeah, I agree with Aria that Virginia's probably the team to beat. But if I'm coaching, it's tough to turn down Duke. I mean, they got nine guys who are top 50 recruits. You know, Virginia has one. Duke has five stars. Virginia doesn't have any. So the ceiling for Duke is probably quite a bit higher than it is for Virginia. Virginia's floor is, you know, probably like 10th in the country or something. So they've got a really high floor. But, you know, as I said, if I'm coaching, I'm taking Duke just because of the all the pieces that Coach K has to work with. You know, he's typically has more five stars than the rest of the ACC combined. That's a little different this year because of North Carolina. But he's got more talent than any ACC roster, and he's got a ton to work with.
I think you both make great points. And what I'm hearing y'all kind of – it sounds like you're saying that the Virginia roster and that style – of roster is just, it's going to get you're making the tournament. You're probably going to have a high seed. If you're going to bet on one team to finish with the best regular season record in the ACC, that's probably the one. And from there, it's like, hey, let's just go out there and see what our experienced guys can do in the tournament, right? In a one and done setting. And the Duke style is more just like, in a single game, our guys are just better, right? Like, we just have better talent. Is there room in the middle to have maybe not nine top 50 guys, but three, let's say, or four, which is more than Virginia, but also be a bit older and have some of that experience? Is there room in the middle in college basketball? And if there is that sort of where Leonard Hamilton has Florida State headed as we look at not only this year, but maybe just peek a little bit ahead to next year? Aria?
You want me to start that one off?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. You took the words out of my mouth as, you know, when you were starting that question, Leonard Hamilton's name popped up in my mind. Last year was probably the prime example of where Florida State was. A couple of top 50 kids. You had some lotto picks. I know Devin Vassell wasn't the quote unquote, five-star talent or top 50 kid when he came in. But I mean, by the end of his sophomore year, he was better than most of them anyway. So you have some talent, you have some seniors. I do think Leonard Hamilton can prove that. And I think we've actually seen that at times with some Michigan State teams where they're just, Izzo has a couple of really good players. I mean, heck, guys, UConn did it a couple of times with some studs and
Kansas.
Teams that just gel around two or three absolute studs. So yeah, I think there's room. And I think the March Madness makes that possible to have that type of team because you're not playing a best of seven. This isn't LeBron versus the Heat, where, you know, if you're the Miami Heat, you're thinking, hey, if you get two, congratulations, pat yourself on the back, because AD and Braun are not losing four games to anyone. But this is college basketball, and so I do think there's room for that. And I do think, you know, Matt, you hit the nail on the head. Florida State can be that program, but I also wouldn't doubt Florida State taking that next step forward either. So just keep an eye out for that. And Michael, I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, Michael, can we be the Goldilocks team?
I agree with what you guys are saying. I think the one point that I would add is that you can't make a living long term off Devin Vassell and Fiondu and bringing in these kind of fringe three-star guys that turn into NBA picks. And so at some point, in order to be that team, Florida State has to ramp up their recruiting, which for the 2021 class is there. I mean, that's exactly what we're looking for. Is we're going to have a very experienced group of guys, Polite and Raekwon Gray and Calhoun, all those guys. You know, they're going to be around. Scottie Barnes is not going to be around. MJ Walker's not going to be around. But we're going to have a group of experienced guys and then some really young, exciting talent coming in. And that kind of puts us into that position that Matt, you were setting up for this question. Is we are the team that is getting old and staying old, but also if you want to win national titles, you got to bring in that young talent, and that's what Ham's been able to do for 2021. Hopefully we have no more defectors like Bryce McGowan's, or he somehow comes back. But even without him, that class is loaded, and you know, very, very much to look forward to. And then this year we have Scotty Barnes. You know, he's probably the best freshman in coming into the ACC, which is not a position that Florida State is used to being in. And someone from North Carolina or Duke will win freshman of the year, obviously, because of the way the votes are cast. But Scotty Barnes is gonna, everybody is super excited about him. And I think that he's probably going to exceed people's expectations.
Yeah. Well, so you're getting into that recruiting and starting finishing talk, which we're going to get into even more. Let's go back, because Aria, you had sort of mentioned UNC and Louisville. Maybe we won't talk quite as much about them as we did Duke, UVA, but two squads who are, so UNC, I guess we could call them sort of like Duke Light, in the sense that they are bringing in a stacked class. They have some returning talent as well. Garrison Brooks is still there, obviously, and he had a good season last year. And then Louisville, maybe he's like UVA Light, in that they're sort of like get old, stay old. But they, because of the recent coaching change, recent as in like the last couple of years, they're not quite as old and established in their system as UVA. David Johnson seems like a pretty strong talent to start a roster off of. But who do you see as maybe, let's just look at the regular season only. Who do you think can be the better, the more consistent, and have that better regular season record in the ACC?
I think North Carolina will. I know that I said that I'm not confident that they will, but if you're asking me to pick, I actually don't think Louisville will be as good as people think. I think they'll still be a tournament team, but that's like a 6 to 8 seed, in my opinion, unless David Johnson like wins ACC Player of the Year, which he's more than capable of. Carolina, I can't believe I forgot to mention Caleb Love, who's coming in. He's awesome. His highlight tape is ridiculous. And the fact that they got Armando Bacot, Kessler, that's going to be a really, really, really good front court. Roger kind of alluded to it, that they have a lot of talent. So, I mean, yeah, last year could have been an anomaly for them, and I'm willing to bet that that is the case. And Brooks, when Cole Anthony went down, Garrison Brooks was awesome. I mean, he was really what people are probably projecting him now as like that ACC Player of the Year or whatever that some of these early season projections have. They saw what he did when Anthony was out. And I think he had like 30 against NC State that one game, which really, you know, moved his prognosis up. But that Carolina team is going to be really good. And I think Roy has a little bit of an older team now. And we've seen in the past, Roy Williams with older talented teams, that usually turns out okay for him in Chapel Hill. So I think Carolina will be a little bit better, but Louisville, you know, we'll see. I mean, Samuel Williamson has to take a step forward. Malik Williams is a nice piece. And Carlet Jones was a good transfer. It feels like Louisville gets a pretty good transfer every year. So, yeah, I mean, they could be good, but losing Jay Scrubb, I think, was huge. Having him declare was massive. So give me North Carolina. Give me North Carolina. But I do think those two end up being 4 and 5 in the ACC, one way or another.
Jay Scrubb, the JUCO commit, who's the number one JUCO player in the country that decided to just go straight to the NBA, and he'll probably be drafted. He won't be a first round pick, but he'll probably be drafted. So, Michael, I'm going to make an editorial decision here and stick UNC in tier one. So we've got Duke, Virginia, Florida State, UNC in tier one, and I'm going to stick Louisville in tier two. So who should join Louisville in that tier two world? In that sort of like, hey, they can definitely get a bye in the ACC tournament, but I don't know if they can actually contend to have the best record in the ACC regular season.
Yeah, Louisville might actually be alone in that second tier. Although, I personally put North Carolina in second tier, but that's just me. But who else is? I mean, Georgia Tech. People forget they finished what, fifth last year in the ACC. Jackers. They went 11-9. They've got Jose Alvarado coming back. They've got a outside chance to somehow be good despite what they look like on paper. But I don't really see anybody, you know, NC State, Clemson, no, Syracuse, no, Miami, no chance. I just don't see Notre Dame maybe has.
Yeah. What about Notre Dame with some of the guys they have coming back?
Yeah. He's kind of the original good old stale coach. And he's getting to the point where he's got some guys who are like 23, which is where he's comfortable. And they've got a bunch of top 100 guys on their team. I think they've got 6 or 7, but they haven't really panned out the way that maybe you'd hope that top 100 guys do. So I just don't see any other team that I would say, they can go head to head with Louisville. And
so does that mean are we looking at, instead of one tier one, tier two, I was going to ask, well, how big is that gap? But is it really more like there's sort of tier one and then tier three? And is that what we're looking at, Ari?
I think you're probably – yeah, I think you're right. And I love that you guys brought up Georgia Tech, because any chance I get to talk about my boys in Atlanta, I love doing it. That's a big year for Pastner, by the way. They don't really have the money to fire him, I don't think, because they're still – I believe they're still even paying Paul Hewitt for the time that he had with his buyout and all that.
It's like Bobby Bonilla Day for the Mets.
Gregory. yeah. It's just like the Georgia Tech does not have this money right now for basketball, but they do have some beautiful facilities, so they could find the money. I'm just saying, Georgia Tech has that experience now, as Michael mentioned. Alvarado's a really good college point guard. Michael DeVoe has a chance to be an ACC first or second team type player. He is really coming on, and I've had a chance to watch their practices, and he just gets better every time I go up there to cover their games. So that's a team that to keep an eye out on. I'm a little higher on Miami than Michael is. I think Miami and Larrañaga have proven, you know, he does better with older teams. And this is like, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is as old of a team as he's had, I think, in a while, with Likes and McGusty. They should be solid, but I agree with Michael that they're not anywhere near like a tier two. So yeah, I think Matt, to your point, you're right. I think it's tier one with Virginia, Duke, Florida State battling it out. And I think North Carolina, Louisville are just kind of on the fringe there of, well, let's see how their season goes. And then everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, the Hurricanes, you know, if you told me that, I don't want to wish injury upon anybody, but if you told me that Chris Likes decided to opt out for COVID or something, I actually think I would become higher on the Hurricanes than I am with him mm-hmm. playing. I mean, he's an exciting guy in terms of like individual plays that he makes on the court, but he's such a defensive liability. And despite being someone who could be the ultimate, like, playmaker and facilitator and penetrate and kick, he insists on taking these really difficult shots that aren't efficient. And I honestly think that who's the guy, Wong for them and Beverly, mm-hmm. I think they're both better. If I'm Larinaga, it's hard to bench the senior, but I don't know. I think they would be better without Likes. But so let's start. So I think the Hurricanes are a good starting point. We sort of talked tier one, tier two. Last year, believe it or not, you know, the ACC with 15 teams, if there was a March Madness, probably would have only sent five teams to the NCAA tournament. Maybe a sixth could have snuck in if they had a deep run in the ACC tournament, but probably would have only sent five. So what does the bottom of the league look like, or the middle to bottom, with the Syracuses and the Miamis and the Clemsons and the Virginia Techs? Like, can the ACC have more depth? You know, maybe we'll start this one off with you, Aria, and kick to Michael in that okay. kind of middle to bottom range.
Yeah, I mean, I think your absolute floor, those three like teams that I think we all believe won't be very good. I mean, Wake, I mean, shoot, man, Forbes has himself a rebuild. Boston College, who.
Oh, yeah, I
can't believe Boston College. Yeah, Boston College at one point had pride, man. Like, you know, they had Rice and they had Dudley and they had, you know, Williams. And I mean, it just used to be such a good program that it's amazing to me that they've been such a rotating door at head coach up there. Pittsburgh, probably not going to be that much better when they lost, you know, they lost McGowan's, which is kind of a big deal. But Capel, I think, will get that right in a few years. And then Notre Dame, I think, is where you start that like middle tier, right? Like where you said Notre Dame, VT. I think we've all come to expect NC State to just be good, but not great. And until they prove that they're better than just good, that's a 20-10 team, 19-11 team every single season for me until they figure it out. Clemson, I'm actually higher on. I think Clemson's got a chance to be solid right up there. They could battle for that 6-8 range with Georgia Tech and Miami. And Cuse is a question mark, guys. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I think Boeheim's on his way out. Can his son take a step forward? Can JG3, Joseph Girard, can he continue to play well? Losing Elijah Hughes was massive. Like that's the kind of guy who could drop 30 with a bum hamstring, you know, like we saw. So that's probably the middle tier for me, Michael. I don't know. I just think, like you guys we've mentioned throughout this first segment, is there was a huge drop off between that top group and the middle and the bottom.
Yeah, I think the questions for those teams are just, there's too many red flags. It's sad that Pitt and BC and Wake all used to have an identity and now they stink. Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. I mean, they've got Coach Young in there. He's you know, he was at Wofford for like 100 years. Is he really going to be able to get it done in the ACC? He lost.
Not with the talent they have.
Yeah, they lost Landers Nolly, the one really talented player they had, transferred out of the program. You know, so I think the bottom tier is probably those teams, Pitt, Virginia Tech, BC, Wake, and then, you know, that middle tier is like Notre Dame, Miami, Syracuse, Clemson, NC State. NC State has what's his name, Bates, who's going to be a hell of a player, but I don't know if you can really, how much you can build around that guy. But
didn't Funderburk come back? Is he back?
Was he like a 12th year guy or something?
I think he could be going on his like 7th year. And then, hey, if he gets another year with, I don't even think this year counts. So
yeah, Funderburk's back. Back, Matt. Yeah. He is back.
Funderburk, Devin Daniels, Thomas Allen, you know, Braxton Beverly. Is that how many?
Sounds like ACC a 19-11 team to me.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, okay. So
they're 20-11 until they're not.
Yeah. So I'm going to put you all on the spot then. So let's say that we would have had five tournament teams last year. But that was with UNC uncharacteristically bad. And I think that it's just unrealistic to think that they're going to miss the tournament 2 years in a row. So let's assume that there would be, I'm going to set the over under at six ACC tournament teams qualifying for whatever NCAA tournament, assuming it's played and we have 68 teams. Would you say over or under six ACC teams in the dance this year, Michael?
Well, I think you got five locks with Virginia, Duke, UNC, Florida State, Louisville. So are we going to get two teams out of that middle tier? Georgia Tech, maybe NC State, maybe, you know. And I think that I'm going to take the under, but I think it's going to end up being six.
Okay. Aria?
I think I'm going to go a little more optimistic than Michael and say one over. So I'll take the over by one. I actually think Georgia Tech will make, and maybe I'm biased because I cover them so much, but I think they've been building towards this with this older team, and they had a really good end of the year last year. So I think Georgia Tech makes it too, to kind of give you that sixth borderline lock outside of the five that Michael mentioned. And then I think I'll place my odds to go yes to one more team outside of there making it. So I'll go over, but slightly.
I think I'm with Aria on this. I do think that the five, like you said, Michael, are the locks. And then I would say that two of NC State, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, and Miami make it. I don't think we get more than seven, but I think two of those find a way to scratch in. NC State will, I think, be helped. They're usually hurt by a horrible schedule. They'll be helped by the fact that this year the schedules are weird and you're just going to play more conference games. I think that'll actually help NC State's cause. All right. So I want to pivot here. And so Aria, as we mentioned, Aria is sort of the play-by-play voice of the FSU women's basketball team. And through that, you've had a chance to actually cover or go to all the facilities, I think, in the ACC landscape here. So, you know, as folks, we often talk about on this podcast and just on the boards and stuff that, hey, part of the name of the game is being able to attract talent to your school. And some of that is relationships and some of that is things that you see in the news from Adidas and whatnot. But some of it is also facilities. And so what do you think are that when you've visited, you know, give me the top three facilities that you've seen in the ACC, are you?
And you're talking specifically basketball facilities, right?
Not basketball facilities, included. Yeah, basketball.
Okay. Number one basketball facilities, when you talk about stadiums for me, arenas is Louisville. KFC Yum Center is majestic. I mean, it is incredible. They actually even have, like NBA teams have, they have another practice facility that's inside of the KFC Yum Center to practice on a court, and then they have their practice facility too. Duke Cameron Indoor is so not impressive when you go in that it kind of knocks down their facilities as a whole, but then they make up for it with their basketball center. So, they definitely make up for it, with their actual basketball specific facility. That's not a 100-year-old stadium. So that's up there. Virginia JPJ is gorgeous. I mean, it is a spectacle. It is beautiful. It is a ton of fun, aesthetically pleasing to walk in there, and their campus might be the prettiest in the ACC. And then I hope I don't miss one. Georgia Tech, McCamish Pavilion is really nice, and Little John Coliseum is really nice as well. From the places that I've been that have top basketball facilities, UNC's is actually not as nice as y'all think. It's really not as special.
Where does Florida State fall in? I mean, you don't have to like give me an exact number, but if we were tiering it out, are we bottom tier or, you know, we're certainly not top tier with that Louisville and Virginia level, but where do you see Florida State in there?
We tried to make we had like a tier three there that we tried for the teams.
Yeah.
I think it's like right in that, you know, right in that 7 to 10 range. It's not bad. The Tucker Center's renovations have helped a lot. And the basketball training center that FSU has is really not the worst in the league. Like it's actually in the probably top, you know, seven or eight. It's a pretty nice facility, but yeah, it's not. When you look around and you go to Clemson and you go to Georgia Tech, two teams that achieve less than Florida State but have nicer facilities, NC State has really nice facilities. I just hesitate to call it their own because they play, you know, where the Hurricanes play. It's not really theirs.
The Hurricane NHL team,
and it's
right?
not on campus.
Yeah.
Right, the NHL team. So they share that arena. But, yeah, there's a lot of nice places in the ACC, guys. Pitt has the decent facilities as well. Notre Dame, the Joyce Center is really nice. But, yeah, Florida State's right there, I think, safely in the top 10, and you could argue 7 to 10 anywhere in there.
Michael, when you know you're out on the West Coast and some, you see I hear folks say like, oh come on, there can't possibly be schools that are these small little, you know, name your Gonzaga or name your Creighton or whatever that has nicer facilities than Florida State. What do you, when you look at like a, I don't know, a Gonzaga or a St. Mary's, what do those facilities kind of look like in terms of your lower level high majors?
Well, Gonzaga's facilities are far superior to Florida State. They've got legit training centers and their arena is nice. And then St. Mary's is a dump. I mean, it's a small little gym. They don't have much in terms of training facilities. Sorry, my dog is going crazy in the background. And so it's kind of a mixed bag.
He agrees with you.
Yeah,
it's kind of a mixed bag. But if you go to, like University of San Francisco or Pacific or those places, they're not on par at all with ACC facilities. But then if you look at the bigger schools, you know, UCLA, USC, Cal, you know, they're putting some legit money into their basketball facilities, and they look good.
Aria, do you hear, like, when you're around the women's program or anything, or just when you're, you know, or even the men's, because I know a lot of times the women and men's programs often end up, you know, having practices near each other or same, you know, similar times and stuff. Do you hear folks talking about the facilities when you go on road trips? Do they say, like, oh, man, are they kind of looking around and talking about, look at these renovations that Clemson's just done? What was it, a couple hundred million? I mean, do they talk about it?
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, people are definitely aware. That's one of the things I know Ham and Coach Semrau, Sue, they really want to change is the fact that they just got to coordinate so much that, the basketball training center, they have to share it. So one team, and Hamilton typically would prefer to just practice in the Tucker Center for many reasons. So they do that when they can so that it causes less of a problem. But that's something I think, you know, some of the bigger programs like a Duke, certainly Carolina, like they have their own facilities for men and women. And matter of fact, fellows, Duke, Coach K's old facility was so nice that when he built the new one, he gave it to Duke's women's program. So you walk into Duke's women's basketball training center and you're like, wow, this is nicer than most men's basketball training. I mean, it's beautiful. And so, yeah, again, without, you know, I don't want to compromise my position with the school and things, you know, there's got to be some more money that's thrown into basketball, Florida State. If, like Michael said, for sustainability, if you want to be an elite school, you've got to start spending like it too for the long term. And I think you're starting to see that though a little bit. They should be pretty close to done with a team like lounge and team facilities that are more, you know, nicer for recreational activities for the kids here soon in the next year or so.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think, I mean, it's not like you're telling the school anything I think they know they need to invest in the facilities, but you know, oftentimes it comes down to, you know, how much are the fans committed and willing to invest, right? Like these things don't build themselves. And so when folks, as I'm sure it's been a tough year for a lot of schools and booster programs and stuff, but when you're looking at projects to build, it certainly helps when you have folks step up and, you know, especially make pledges to specifically a program, right? Like you can pledge, I think, your support to the tip off programs or whatnot, or earmark your money to go towards, you know, a women's basketball program or the men's basketball program that has been so successful for so long. We appreciate your insight. I mean, Aria, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'll give you a chance to.
No, you're good.
To kind of close out there, but we really enjoyed having you on and just the perspective that you bring from across the ACC. And we're going to have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think I was just going to end with, you know, Rogner is on the West Coast, but I think he gets a gauge of it on social media and just following I mean, but you know, Matt, you and I have kind of been in Tallahassee for a long time. And my only point was like last year to me, and maybe the year before, but definitely last year, was like the first true renaissance that I kind of like felt was legitimate in Florida State basketball, where with the fan base caring and packing out 6, 7, 8 ACC games sold out and having those big crowds, and non-conference attendance was up a tick. I think we're to get to where we want to get as a basketball program. The fan base is important. The support is important to get these facilities to be able to send an email that says, hey, can you donate to the basketball program, and not having them be like, yeah, but I'm already donating to football, you know,
right.
like last year for me was the first time I think I felt the city of Tallahassee truly, and I don't want to say care because they've cared before, but truly start to have a buzz around a basketball program and become almost a basketball city for a year, tailgating before the games, going to Madso and College Town and, you know, tailgating outside. I mean, it was just like there, it was a zoo for some of these games. And it was so heartwarming for me, who started going to games when Robinson was the head coach. And, you know, when you made the NIT, you would kind of high five because it meant the season lasted a little longer. And if you got 3,000 people in the arena, it was a good day, unless Duke was playing in Tallahassee. We're starting to see it. Like, I think we're starting to see it, and maybe it's football being down. That could definitely be a part of it. But I think Florida State basketball is here to stay and as a culture. And I think it's important. And the new blood thing is awesome. And that recruiting class is awesome. And I just really believe basketball is about to take off in Tallahassee and be here for the long haul.
We hope you are right, sir. I really hope that there's no I mean, obviously there's going to be a disruption, but that the momentum isn't completely lost with a lot of the fan restrictions that are, of course, COVID related. So I really hope that folks, if they get an opportunity to go out and even just, like you said, go to one game or support, it's a fun time to be around, as you said, for someone who went to a lot of games when there was less than 1,000 people in the arena. It's a fun, Big Guard U is a fun place to be right now. Aria, we're gonna let you go, and we'll have to have you back on during the season.
Yep. Thanks, guys. You guys be safe and talk to you soon.
Yeah. Great talking to you.
Bye. That was good to have him on. I see him at most of the games, and he's just got a great perspective given his travels around the ACC. All right, Michael, I think we need to pay some bills, so let's head to break real quick. And when we come back, we will zoom in on Florida State specifically and look at the upcoming season. All right. So that was a great conversation about the ACC in general. It seems like we have some consensus that FSU should remain as one of the tier one teams this year. So let's talk about FSU. We have a lot of talent coming back. We also lost a lot of talent. Going to be, have three guys that will probably be playing professionally next year, two of which will be high draft picks. But what do you see, Michael, as FSU's starting five, or does the starting five even matter?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of matters. The finishing five is way more important. Ham tends to start tends to coach the first half in one particular style, and then the second half he's really closing down the rotation. But yeah, we lost, you know, Devin, Trent, we're both starters. Dom started a bunch of games, so we're down some starters. Who's it going to be? I think Balsa is probably going to start games just to win the tip. I don't know how long he'll be in there, but
the old Chris Camaggi start.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's not that I'm not expecting Balsa to be good this year. It's just we got a lot of guys. MJ, I think, is the one lock who's definitely going to be in the starting five. And so then the other three spots are kind of up for grabs. And I would take Raekwon Evans, just so that we're starting the game with a true point guard on the floor. Raekwon Gray, we'll have the twin Raekwons out there starting. Could be Osborne, could be Gray, but I'll go with Gray. And then Scotty Barnes, who is gonna be really tough to keep out of any lineup, whether it's the starting five or the finishing five or the middle five.
Yeah, no, you're right in that I think it does matter who starts, but maybe not as important as it is at most schools. And to your point, I think you oftentimes see a see a substitution pattern that lends itself to about 11 guys playing in the first half, and then a substitution pattern. It's like, it's almost like Hamilton figures out, okay, of these 11, who's got it today, and then I'll roll with 8 in the second half. But I, you know, the minutes thing is almost what's maybe more interesting to me. So does someone play the 32, 33 minutes a game like we saw with Trent last year?
I think MJ Walker is going to be there. I think he is going to be totally critical to this team's success, and they're going to want him out there a lot. I think for the non-starting five that I just picked, Anthony Polite, I don't, you know, I certainly don't see him playing 31 or 32 minutes a game, but I think he's probably going to average more minutes than a couple of the starters.
Yeah. I think you're spot on with Polite. So Polite brings two, first of all, he brings incredible defensive perimeter defense and just defensive awareness. And secondly, he stretches the floor with his shot. So I think you're right. So I'm looking at it. He played 49% of the team's minutes last year. I would be shocked if Anthony Polite is under 55% this year. So, you know, whether that's starting, finishing, what have you, more than half the minutes of the game. So Trent Forrest led the team last year with 76% of the minutes, of the possible minutes played. So the second guy was Devin Vassell. MJ was at 52%, but I think that's down because he didn't play. Remember, he was nagging injury there in the beginning of the season, and really had a couple games where really he only played a few minutes. So you would expect MJ to be over at least the 60-65% minutes mark, right? Assuming health.
Yeah, I'm thinking 65-70, maybe 70, like somewhere right in there. Assuming, you know, he missed, I think, 5 games last year, which is gonna, when you're looking at percentage of minutes, it's going to definitely bring that down. And so 70, if he were, you know, playing every game, is almost 30 minutes a game. So somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, no, I think that sounds about right. Now the Osborne Gray question is a good one. You know, for me, when I think about finishing lineups, I often think about free throw shooting, particularly in closer games, which I think this year just is going to lend itself to closer games because, one, it's mostly conference play, and two, everybody had sort of disrupted off seasons. So Raekwon Gray is right at about a 70% free throw shooter. Malik Osborne, although his stroke looks nice, is actually about 10% lower than that in a limited sample size. Is that going to fact? Does that mean that maybe Gray sees more of the minutes down the stretch, or do you need Osborne's ability to stretch a defense and grab defensive rebounds? Osborne was the best defensive rebounder by percentage on the team last year.
Yeah, the coaches just like Raekwon Gray. They see him doing a lot of different little things, and if he could shoot, then he would be a star. Shoot it from three, he would be a
lottery pick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And Malik Osborne, I don't know if you've seen pictures of him lately, but that dude is jacked. Like he spent his COVID time well in the gym. But yeah, so it's one of those things where I think that, you know, Gray or Osborne, if you're looking at a finishing five, like one of those guys is going to be out there. Some maybe both of them, but they both bring that size to the table when you're switching. So they're generally, you know, you can play them down in the post in the small lineup, either one of them. And so they're kind of interchangeable, whoever's having a good game and whatever matchups the coaches like.
Sure. And foul trouble as well. I just, you know, Osborne has just developed into such a strong rebounder that especially losing someone like Dom and Trent, who is a great rebounding guard, I don't know. I'm wondering sometimes if is he even going to be the starter because of that. But I do agree with you that the staff likes Gray, and for good reason. Gray does a lot of little things that don't show up in a box score. Like you said, if he was better than 9 for 41 from three last year, he may have been flirting with a professional career. So there's a guy we haven't talked about yet, and that's Sardar Calhoun. And so this is someone who is probably at an echelon higher than maybe a lot of JUCO transfers who come in terms of his skill and athletic ability. If you've seen video of him, I mean, this dude is in the gym a lot. He is jacked. He can throw down windmills with ease, and his range, he doesn't have to change his mechanics as deeper and deeper he gets out. He has such elevation on his jump shot naturally that his range sometimes seems limitless. I know you have to consider JUCO defenses, but I'm talking about just his mechanics in terms of pulling up from 35 feet. Is Calhoun, I can't imagine he's a starter unless he is just absolutely wowing in practice, mainly because it takes people a little while to learn our defensive principles. But is he someone that sees 45-50% of the minutes?
Absolutely. I think that you hit the spot in that he was like a 46 or 47% three-point shooter in JUCO, and that translates. And unless something weird happens, like Raekwon Gray or Nathaniel Jack suddenly turns into a 50%, 3-point shooter, we have to have Calhoun out on the floor. You know, Wyatt Wilkes can kind of do the same thing, but he's limited in a lot of other, he certainly doesn't have the athleticism of Calhoun. And so I think that Calhoun is one of those guys who's just going to slowly work himself into more and more minutes. And by the end of the year, he would definitely be on my, sort of the finishing five lineup. I don't know that he'll ever be on the starting lineup, but I think he's got a good chance to average double figures in points, which is hard to do when you're playing 11, 12 guys. But I think that him and Scotty and MJ Walker are probably going to lead the team in scoring.
Yeah, no. So Calhoun, I'll be honest. I think the floor of this year's team is lower than last year's. Let's just call that off the top. You don't have Trent Forrest at point guard. So the floor of this year's team is lower than last year's. And I think you're going to see that floor early on. You know, it's a weird off season. They didn't get a lot of they didn't have a lot of the structures in place that they normally do. And so I just think early in the season, yeah, there's going to be some like, oh, where's all the great offense that we saw last year and these turnovers? That's just going to be college basketball. So I think you're going to see the floor of this team early on, but the ceiling of this team, I don't know, is actually that much lower than the ceiling of last year's team, which for what it's worth, I actually thought the ceiling of 2 years ago team might've been a little higher if they had stayed healthy. But the reason why is because in my mind of Calhoun, I think that to your point, if by February or March, Calhoun is a guy who is understanding the defensive principles, coming off the bench, going 3 for 7 from three each game, which is very easily done for a guy of his skill set. That's 9 points right there. You get a breakaway dunk. You're already at 11. I think that the March ceiling of this team could be dependent on how adept Calhoun is at translating into the D1 game. And if he makes that transition quickly, it could be something else.
Yeah, I wonder about the defense. And I think that if everything gels on this team, I think that the defense could be as good as last year, if not even better. I mean, we've got more athletic big men.
We talk about Ngam, right?
Right, yeah, I know. And it's like trading him for Dom is a pretty good trade in our favor. Plus, Balsa's got another year in the weight room, and he's actually you can see that he has muscles on his body. He's not really all jacked up yet, but he's getting bigger. And then the young guys are the guys that we think of as young. Anthony Polite, he's 23 years old. He's not young. Anthony Polite and Raekwon, they're just more time in the system. MJ Walker, the defense has a chance to be sneaky, really, really good. And I know that we lost Forrest and Devin Vassell and Pat Williams, who could all play defense, but I think that could really carry the team, especially early, and especially in the COVID times where a lot of the teams that we're playing maybe have more new guys and aren't getting a ton of practice time, and so I think that could really carry the load early.
So the defense carries the load. Scotty Barnes is probably the best defensive recruit in basketball, maybe with the exception of someone, you know, like Evan Mobley, like a big man. But I would say the best non-big man defensive basketball recruit coming in to the college ranks this year. And so he's someone that I think will just, you know, have an easier time transitioning in Hamilton's defensive system and be such a versatile piece that, you know, maybe not even miss a beat there. So if defense carries us, and we assume for these conversations, good health for guys like MJ Walker, which is going to be critical to the success of the team, it may come back to that floor spacing, three-point shooting. Guys like Polite, guys like Wilkes, guys like Osborne, like, can they be 38% shooters as opposed to 33% shooters? And so here's my question to you. In 2017, which was the year that we sort of first saw the fruits of this new sort of positionless system, we didn't quite have the same interchangeableness of players yet, but that was when we were first really transitioning there. And PJ Savoy, so we made the tournament. PJ Savoy was actually sort of a relevant revelation on that team and helped space that floor so that guys like Bacon and Xavier Rattan-Mays could slash and get to the rim. PJ Savoy went 40 of 100 from three that year for an even 40%. He came off the bench. He only played, get this, 16% of a total minutes, but he went 40 of 100 from three. So I ask you, over under, Calhoun makes 40 threes. And before you say, well, this is a shortened season, Savoy did that in 28 games. So over under, Calhoun makes 40 threes.
I will take the over. I mean, we've had a few guys in the past like Savoy who all they do is shoot threes, and Calhoun's kind of one of those guys. Like, he is always looking to shoot threes, and
yeah.
And Florida State is going to have to play fast this year. I know that we say this every year, but for the offense to be effective, we're going to have to be getting up and down the court, which is why we have Scotty Barnes and Anthony Polite and Raekwon Evans, all the, you know, these multiple ball handlers who can all initiate the break. And he's going to get a ton of opportunities, and he's going to have some games where, you know, I think he shoots like 10 or 11 threes. And so I'll take the over.
I'm with you. I don't know that he's going to be 40%. That's a phenomenal mark by PJ. Way to come in there and get it done, buddy, that 2017 year. Remember, though, we've stepped the three-point line back since then, right? I don't, for folks who have forgotten, we're about a foot further back. So I don't know that he's going to come in and hit 40%. I do think he makes 40, and I think he makes 40 because he's going to have a couple of, like, 7-for-11 games. And honestly, he may even, you know, set an FSU, he may come out and have like a 9-of-13 game. Like, I would not put it past that kid. So, I do think he hits 40. And I think if maybe more importantly, he can just be a 37-38% guy in ACC play, that will allow guys like MJ Walker and Polite to not be, the center of attention so much, because for everything that Scotty Barnes is, he does not right now have a reliable jump shooter, and every scout in the ACC will know that. This isn't a secret we're giving away. So they're going to make him prove it in terms of making jump shots. All right, let's look at – we're going to quickly transition here. Over the next month, we'll have a lot of in-depth coverage of previewing the season, both on the pod and in articles on Tomahawk Nation. But let's look ahead a little bit. We alluded to it earlier in the pod that – you know, we really are just trying to find that baby bear just right mix there of talent and returning seniors and experience. And next year's recruiting class, as we've mentioned before, is loaded. But it took a hit when Bryce McGowan's, the guy that I called out on the pass pod as maybe the one I was most excited about in terms of like that top end ceiling, decommitted. He decommitted, saying he wanted to explore his options. It had been since February. Obviously, the world has changed since February. His brother is now at Nebraska, and he decommitted. He announced a top five. Florida State is still in that top five. So I think I have two questions for you, Michael. Do you expect him back? I mean, what are the odds of him of getting a guy back into the class after the decommit? And what does that do if he does or does, if he is or isn't part of the class, how does that change the class?
Well, if I did the crystal ball stuff on 247, then I would probably be picking him to Nebraska, but with a really low, likelihood. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back at Florida State, but I don't think that Florida State is in any way leading. I think it's likely that he ends up in Nebraska, play with his brother. His parents and family can travel a lot less, and in times of COVID, and see both guys playing at the same time. Because
they'll have to travel to see him play, because they won't be able to see him play much on TV at Nebraska. Just tossing that out there.
You can get really good seats at a Nebraska game too.
Yeah, so they've actually got a great arena, and
it all works out. They'll win five Big Ten games, and everybody will be happy.
Yeah, people will see him at the conference tournament once.
So the impact on the overall class, we've still got the number one class in the country, and we'll likely end up with top five or top six or something class, and it's a hit because obviously Florida State's never had 3 5 stars coming in at one time, and you want to see that. But Matthew Cleveland, Jalen Worley, John Butler, McLeod, that's still just a really top-notch class. We've hardly touched on Jalen Worley, in our recruiting pods, but that guy is, and I bring him up because I said I was going to after the last pod, but that guy's a player that you look at and you watch him run up and down the court, and you're thinking, okay, this is a 5-star, but he's not crazy athletic. He's not a super good shooter or a beautiful shot. He can dribble, he can pass, but nothing really jumps out at you as being a 5-star talent or a 5-star skill. And then you check the box score at the end of the game and he totally dominated.
Yeah, he controls the whole game.
Yeah, he's just this guy who is a basketball player, and I'm really excited to see him play. I would be more upset if he decommitted than with Bryce. I mean, I love McGowan's game and I love Cleveland's game, but I think that Jalen Worley is really the quiet kid in this class that could come in and just be a hell of a player at Florida State from day one.
Yeah, no. So Bryce has a flashier game for sure, and. I hope he makes the best choice for himself. I don't ever want to disparage a kid. I mean, I've been through that situation of having him trying to pick a college or pick a program that fits for you. And I hope he makes the best choice for himself. I think he could fit in really well at Florida State. He must think that. He already committed there once. So I think that everyone knows that his length, his athleticism, his ability to shoot, pass, handle the ball is a really good fit for what we run. And it's very similar to Matthew Cleveland's game, maybe a little bit better of a shooter than Cleveland. And so you have that positional functional overlap, which some people would say bad, but actually at our system, that's good. That just allows more flexibility and more chess, moving the chess pieces around. But I get what you're saying, that if I hear you correctly, Jalen Worley's skill and just his ability to control a game from start to finish is perhaps less easily replaced. Like there's maybe we could go and find another wing kind of like Bryce McGowan's, or we could go find a big point like a Josh Minot there's other recruits out there that can kind of replicate some of the skills that Bryce McGowan's brings to the table. Maybe not quite at the 5-star level of McGowan's, but Worley, if I hear you correctly, is just, that's something that we haven't really had at Florida State in like a Jalen Brunson or don't go crazy on me here, but maybe even at the same stage of development, high school, like a poor man's Devin Booker from Kentucky and the Phoenix Suns. I'm not calling him a future all pro, but that same kind of game.
Yeah, and I think you pretty much nailed it. It kind of reminds me of Dwayne Bacon and Malik Beasley. They came in at the same time, played on the same team. Beasley was one and done, but Bacon was the more valuable player.
Yeah.
So, and I think we could be seeing the same thing. And with McGowan's, it's kind of weird in that you mentioned he released a top five, and LSU and Georgia are on there. And if he ends up at one of those schools, that will be a big disappointment. If he goes to Nebraska, that's fine. But just as a fan, you know, this article came out last week in Sports Illustrated where they were talking about how the FBI and the NCAA's inability to do anything about cheating has really freed up schools with a lot of money, like the SEC, to just kind of double down on their, you know, obvious payments to players. And LSU and Georgia are obviously, you know, LSU, they've got the smoking gun, and Georgia, everybody knows they cheat. And it's just, it'd be super frustrating if he picks one of those schools. So I'm hoping that if he doesn't come back to Florida State, that he ends up at Nebraska or Michigan, but we shall see.
Yeah. The fact that Will Wade is still coaching basketball, I think, has emboldened everybody. I mean, if that guy who can be on essentially a podcast for what it, basically, and say things like, we're going to make a strong ass offer, that's what it, I know he wasn't on a podcast, but by the time it gets plays on an HBO special, it basically is like one. If he is still coaching with no repercussions at all, I think that that's pretty good indication that you can do anything you want right now in the wild, wild west of college basketball. I'll counterpoint, though, and say that, hey, if he ends up at Georgia or LSU, then kind of like Anthony Edwards, I'm really not sure he would have been a great fit here anyways. Like, it's one of those things that, is it frustrating? Yes. Would that actually maybe have not then been a good – we don't thrive by having guys who want to freelance and take a lot of inefficient shots and, quite honestly, maybe be Malik Beasley, if I'm being honest. We thrive when we have people who are – when we have Patrick Williams, who's willing to come off the bench despite going to be a lottery pick, and do the things that we're asking him to do in the system. That's when we are winning 26, 27, 29 basketball games. So if Bryce McGowan makes that choice of UGA or LSU, it could be an indication that it maybe is better that we move on someone that has a little bit more buy-in to the kind of team selfless philosophy that makes Florida State successful.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So anyone else that we should be aware? I know there's some 2022 guys that I don't want to be that guy who's already talking about 2022. So maybe we'll leave that on the table for another pod. But anyone else in the 2021 class that we maybe should have our eyes on?
You know, I wonder if we kind of missed out on some of the guys. I mean, like, I don't even know who to name at this point, but like
James White. Reed.
Yeah, James White. Yeah, certainly, you know, James White was probably somebody that we could have landed. But in terms of big fish, there's not much left out there. So I wonder if they're going to, if because
but the transfer market, the new rules, right?
Yeah, it could be crazy. And so you want to save some space, even though they might not count against your scholarships. You might be able to have more than 13 guys on scholarship, but you still have to find the right guys, the right fit, the right whatever. And so we might want to just save a space or two for the transfer market.
I'm with you. I love that idea. I think you of course give Bryce, I mean, hey, I still want Bryce at Florida State. I hope he picks Florida State. Mm-hmm. You let him make his decision. Maybe you go and kick the tires on Minot down in South Florida and just see if he's interested in decommitting since some space freed up. Maybe you kick the tires there. Otherwise, yeah, I say save the space and just get ready for a crazy offseason of stuff. All right. I think, you know, this has been a good pod. We probably kind of start wrapping it up there. I did want to toss out that, so the basketball season for college starts November 25th. The NBA season, which just wrapped up, actually is having their NBA draft on November 18th. So it's kind of like an appetizer for the season starting, because you can get all the highlights and hear about all the guys that just left the college basketball universe. And it should, quite honestly, it should be a highlight night of Florida State. Florida State, as we've talked about, is probably going to be the only school with multiple lottery picks and is certainly going to have two first-round draft picks. So if you're looking for some basketball Florida State fun coming up, I would tune into the NBA draft on November 18th.
Yeah, I don't know about those two first-round picks anymore. I mean, if you follow Twitter a couple weeks ago, people were losing their mind over – A video that leaked of Devin Vassell and his shot looked a little different. Did you see anything about that?
I think I'm picking up on your sarcasm here. You've got a lot of Billy Badasses on the internet that see a 10-second clip of Devin Vassell shooting 35, 40-foot threes and suddenly proclaiming that they would pass on him because he can't shoot now or something. His form is bad. I saw that. And first of all, the fact, this is the problems with social media, the people that see 10 seconds of something and are experts. I don't give a shit, let me just say, about what a guy's shot looks like. We've seen, Sean Marion had a horribly ugly shot, and he was an all-star. And then we, not to even mention guys like Larry Bird that sort of had that overhead release. Devin Vassell is a guy who has proven at ample sample size that he can shoot the three, and he can shoot it certainly off the catch and even a little bit off the bounce. And frankly, his shot is while a little slow, the high release point makes it harder to even block. What is he tinkering on things with his shot, mechanics? Maybe. Is he working on some strength to get it that out there a little bit, 30, 40 feet? Maybe. But here's what I know. He's a guy who is an elite team defender. He is able to rebound and play out of positionally defensively. He can guard the two and three legitimately. Maybe he can slide down on a slim four if he's having to guard someone like a Robert Covington. And he is just, he's going to be in the gym to do the things that create winners. You look at the teams that he was on, he took himself from not even a top 200 recruit to a lottery pick here in 2 years with his work ethic. And you're telling me that you'd rather guys like Isaac Okoro, who can't even shoot, forget mechanics. The ball doesn't go in the hoop, and you're going to drop Devin Vassell because his mechanics looked a little funky on 5 seconds of Twitter feed.
Yeah, once he's got $100 million in the bank, maybe he can respond to Johnny Jones _222 or whatever out on the social medias. He's, if you want to make a bunch of money in the NBA, you knock down shots over closeouts, and he's already proven that he can do that. So.
Yeah, he proved that his freshman year. He proved it his sophomore year. Look, if you're looking for a high ceiling guy, then you should go draft James Wiseman or maybe LaMelo Ball or Anthony Edwards or maybe even Patrick Williams if you're looking for a guy with super high ceiling. But if you're looking for a guy who's going to come in and be an immediate contributor to a winning basketball team, then I think you could do a lot worse than Devin Vassell, somewhere in the 5 to 10 range. So anyways, I guess rant over. That draft comes up on the 18th. You can go see if Devin Vassell cares about what people on Twitter say about a shot after he becomes a first round draft pick and signs a huge contract. Michael, as always, it was fun. I'm going to go check some fantasy scores, fantasy football scores, and we'll do this again soon.
Sounds good. It was great talking to you.
Yep. Bye.